Sorry. Everybody had a chance to approve the review the minutes from the last meeting. Anybody see any changes? Motion to approve. Seconded. Okay, that's done. And we have the brief discussion on tone of fish.
May I, Mr. Chairman, may I do an intro?
Please.
Okay. Bobby Wheatley called. He cannot be here. Good to see a good turnout of the committee. And I think I need to preface what you're going to see tonight in case you weren't here last time by saying that we'll meet again in April. We'll meet again in May. We'll probably meet in June. I would think that there will be a push by the ASMSC on April 30th to develop an addendum so that it can be adopted at the annual meeting, which is usually late October. I'm not sure of the date this year. Sometimes it's early November. The addendum, Bob Beal was on the phone today with a group that I'm part of, and he answered the question that how about an addendum and an amendment? So there are those on the striped bass board who think that the amendment, Amendment 6, hasn't really done well in terms of the stock, and they want goals and objectives and biological reference points and all things possibly changed, and that's an amendment. That takes longer. That's a year and a half minimum. An addendum is something that could be in place for 2020. The idea is to put out the fire. What is the fire? The fire is mainly that there's 48% dead discards in the recreational fishery, and there's also the harvest of large fish still. That's coastwide now. The problem is that, and I mentioned this to Bob Beal, that we probably didn't do such a great job in 2014 with Addendum 4 because that raised size limits. And by raising size limits in the bay and when the bay's stock gets out on the coast but isn't recruited to the gear yet, you get a lot of discards. And so at the February meeting, there was a motion which you saw last month, which more or less said, what would it take to get the fishing mortality rate back to the target or below? Because the fishing mortality rate has been beyond the target twice. And because of that, that signals Amendment 6 to take action. And the action is that the fishing mortality rate has to be reduced to the target or below in 1 year. And I don't know what the 1 year means. Whether it means when the assessment was done, whether it means when the ASMSC says time to start, but I think that's going to be irrelevant because I know you've got some information. If you go to a lot of the states, they want to have an addendum. The majority want to have an addendum. Will the addendum be effective, or I should say more effective than Addendum 4, and not just look at raising size limits? So at that February meeting, they put the typical bag size, and then they put end season if necessary. Well, I think everyone understands that if you have a closed season in the recreational fishery, that you have hook and release mortality, and you have a little bit of recoupment, because when you squash the recreational season down, well, we've seen it here in Virginia back in the early 90s, everyone wants to get out and go fishing as soon as it opens. But that pales in comparison to keep on pushing fish onto the coast that are anywhere from 4 to 6 years old and still not recruited to the size limit that the recreational fisheries have, 28 inches, and you get a lot of discards. In the bay, the same thing. We did not, and I think, I haven't looked yet, I said I would look last time, but we do not historically have a lot of recreational discards. We're usually one of the lower states, within the three lowest perhaps over time. But, you know, a state like Maryland had a lot of discards. In fact, Maryland had 40% of the entire recreational removals. So when we talk about removals, we're talking about what gets harvested, and what gets discarded, and that is a dead discard. And we can debate some other time whether 9% of the fish released is the right amount of dead discards or not, but it's been there since the late 80s. That figure's been there since the late 80s. So April 30th, we'll know more. We're doing this information for you last month and this month and next month, not knowing what ASMSC is going to exactly know. The only thing I know is that Alex is on the technical committee, and they started looking at options to reduce fishing mortality, reduce harvest, pardon me, from 2017 by 17%. Do I have that right? By 17%. Now, the problem we have here at the commission is the real way to try and do this is not just harvest, but also to know where the dead discards are. And then, if you know the harvest and the dead discards, then you can figure out a way of what lowers the fishing mortality rate and at the same time increases the spawning potential. You probably know we don't have a bona fide stock assessment person here at the agency. We're going to try and get one, which is encouraging. But in the meantime, we have to cobble together what we can. So that's the real issue. We are not trying to go forward with anything. We're trying to show you options as we go along. Our vested interest is to develop what's called conservation equivalency options, meaning that if the ASMSC, which has federal law behind it, decides that there's going to be a cut in commercial quota and the recreational fishery is going to have to change the size, do the seasons, whatever, we want to make sure we have enough options, if possible, so that we can substitute those as long as they're more palatable to everyone involved. So we are really just trying to ensure that we don't wait on this. I think the worst thing that could happen for us to just say, well, we'll wait until the ASMSC does something. They're going to do something. You can tell by the fact that they're already having their technical group look at a 17% reduction. So that's what we're really up to. You know that you have a lot of good information about the fisheries. We're happy to hear your advice. We're going to go through some recreational options first, and then a little background, then the recreational options, and then go through some commercial options if you can. One thing I ask is, staff has 8 items on the commission agenda tomorrow. So we would like to end this tonight at 8:30. And if you want, next time I'll try and arrange that we have a meeting, not the night before the commission, but for next commission, we'll give them a report on everything that's happened with FMAC. So we'll do that. So we do have a load tomorrow. So if there are any questions. Okay. I'm going to launch into just a little bit of information here. Why don't you launch into the information?
Well, this is an issue. You first discussed way back in January, I think January 9th, and that was the towing of fish through the social media, newspapers, and just phone calls and word of mouth. We heard a lot about, and it was at that time of year, in December, it was striped bass. People were towing striped bass behind the boat. And a lot of folks were pretty outraged over it. Got advice from you folks of what should be done, and at that time we developed
the definition of what towing was, as well as limited it to striped bass and cobia. Subsequently, the commission approved a public hearing, but before that took place, the Regulatory Review Committee met and they decided they wanted to broaden the scope of it, postpone the public hearing for a month, and re-advertise and then come back in March. So I got comments from people that you all dropped the ball on the towing of fish. Well, the ball was never dropped. We just had advice that this was a better rate way to go. Anyhow, this, not to take up any more of your long, what could be a long evening, what I've got up here are three options that the commission is going to be presented with tomorrow. And we're looking for advice from you as to what we can tell the commission regarding your choice. And they go from most restrictive to least restrictive. And because the regulation was re-advertised, the commission can avail itself of any one of these options. So the first option would be limiting the towing of finfish species to those species regulated by a possession limit. Spot croaker don't have a possession limit. But we do know there are some concerns if all fish with a possession limit were regulated, particularly by those folks that would troll them. And what is trolling if it's not towing? Well, it's one of the same if you distill down the definition. But the second option they'll see tomorrow is any finfish with a possession limit of less than 10. And lastly, would return to the original option, or what FMAC pretty well unanimously supported back in January, and that would be striped bass and cobia. Before you folks discuss it, I do want to mention that I got an email from Wes Blow. He regrets he's not going to be here tonight, but from the sounds of it, it's probably just as well because he's feeling ill. But he did say he wanted to support the prohibit the towing of any finfish. And I sent an email back to him. I said, well, you know that means you put an end to live bait trolling. And he came back and said, well, that's not what he meant. He said, really, what I mean is taking a rope and dragging a fish around. So with caveats, he supports the idea of banning the trolling of towing of fish, but already he's looking at some type of exemptions. And with that, questions, and looking to hear from you.
Okay, Tom?
We're talking right now about spot and croaker, probably, and I say probably, possibly, however you want to put it, putting a catch limit on them. And if you're worried about confusion over whether you're fishing with a bait that's a spot or a croaker, or towing a fish that happens to have a hook through its mouth still, then you have to do something to make sure you exempt them because people use them for bait too much. And I really see that by this time next year we're going to have a limit on them of some kind. I can't see that not happening.
And the gorilla in the room is when you're fishing live eels,
yeah,
and you got a bunch of lines out, you want to straighten them up, power the boat, or maybe you do want to slow troll them at a knot, you're trolling a finfish that has a possession limit. It's 25.
Bluefish, maybe. Somebody uses a bluefish for live bait, too.
Pardon me?
Bluefish also have a possession limit.
Yeah. Oh, you're exactly right. There's 19 different species that do have a possession limit.
So I would say the first one would not.
Do we know of any other species that we're having a problem with other than striped bass and cobia? Are people throwing red drum or...
I'm chuckling because I think back, what is it, this statement? Well, there's the unknown, and then there's the unknown unknowns.
Yeah.
So we don't know what other problems that we might be having, but we do know for certain that striped bass and cobia, both of which have extremely restrictive possession limits. They are the subject of a number of fishing tournaments where there is a cash or prize incentive. And we have gotten reports, certainly the striped bass, that's really what kind of tilted this in our direction, but we heard the same thing about cobia fishing. Just one fish over 50 inches per boat, people are kind of pulling those around to keep them alive in case they get a bigger one and they feel they've done the right thing when they release it and save it and swim away.
Any committee members heard of any other fish tying issues? Okay. I think my personal opinion is that we're kind of scrimped for time here. We want to start with bass and cobia. Anybody see any reason to do anything else at the moment?
I probably would be remiss if I didn't say that the Regulatory Review Committee did have a rationale for extending it to those other 19 species that have a possession limit. And that was a thought it might preclude some high grade. And we've heard comments from you folks. We've heard comments from VISA, Mike Avery, that you know the problem is high grading. The real problem is how do you curtail it?
But there was also something about sharks, and it one. What are the possession limits for recreational for sharks? Because if that's under 10 and it's a big shark, they can't get in the boat. Then we're opening up.
Well, I can guarantee if it's any kind of a big shark,
correct.
19 species, not including sharks, the 40-odd species that are covered.
Right. I'd be in favor of leaving it alone and just a striped bass and the cobia. I think that's what it needs to be.
Anybody want to make a motion to, we'll make a motion and we'll vote on it.
I would like to make a motion, a negative motion. I would like to make a motion, and we can do a second one too, that no matter what, item number one should come off the table. It shouldn't be any fish with a possession limit. Only because of eels and the potential for spot and croaker to get a possession limit in the next year or two.
Second.
Okay.
Just take that one off the table, and we can discuss the other one.
Well, I think if we go with number three and nothing else, that takes everything else off the table.
So I'll make a motion for number three.
Okay.
Substitute motion. Makes mine go away.
I'm sorry. What is the motion?
Well, there's a substitute motion for number three. If it gets seconded, and mine goes away. Until
I'll motion. Second means.
We have two. All right. Everybody ready to vote? Anybody want to talk about it?
No, I want to please clarify what we just did or what was motion.
Well, the first motion is to do away with number one as an option.
That was a motion that was seconded?
It's a motion.
Okay, fine.
Yeah. Anybody in the audience have any opinion on what we're planning to do here, talking about doing? All right, seeing none.
So we're voting on?
All in favor of the second motion.
Okay.
Do away with striped bass, or do.
Only
striped bass and cobia. Thank you. Please raise your right hand.
I'm just abstaining, Jeff. I'm not opposing any.
Okay. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Is that it? Yeah. 7 yeses and 1 abstention, please. All right. I think I did that backwards, but to do away with number one, do we want to make the vote on that? Do you want to just withdraw?
I'll withdraw.
All right, thank you. So our opinion is number three, on. And for the regulatory people, there are problems with the other two. And we don't know of any other fishery that's had this problem at the moment. We can add that later.
I worry about black drum, maybe.
We haven't heard of any occurrences. Yeah. Of course, we didn't hear about this until recently either,
yeah.
For the most part. So, if that will take care of that.
That's all I need.
All right. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Recreational black sea bass.
Good afternoon, committee members. My name is Alex Aspinwall, and today I will be going over the 2019 recreational black sea bass fishery. So if you recall, in February, Virginia and North Carolina opted into this fishery and are responsible for monitoring their catch and landings and reporting back to ASMSC. So the table in front of you looks at the monitoring, the participation effort from 2019 and 2018. So in 2019, we had 254 permittees. Oh, I'm sorry. Let me change that real quick. Is that better? Let's see what I can do. Maybe I can enlarge it. Maybe a reading view?
There you go.
Okay, sorry about that. So 2019, we had 70 trips. Very similar to what we saw in 2018. We had 17 trips sampled by staff, which is double what we saw in 2018. We sampled just over 1,200 black sea bass, which is four times what we sampled last year. And we had a reported landings estimate of 4,398 fish. And so what we've done is use the average weight that we collected and expanded that out, and that's about 10,082 pounds. So this table may look familiar to you. During the last FMAC meeting, we used the landings from 2018 to estimate how many days we would have to forfeit. Having 10,000 pounds of landings using the daily landings rate, so for wave three, that's 486 pounds per day. That's 21 days that we would have to forfeit from wave three or wave five to account for those landings that we saw this February, and also 21 days from wave five to account for those landings. So during our last FMAC meeting, we discussed where we would take that from. Would we take it from wave three or wave five? It was made clear that there are other species to catch during wave three. That's when red drum, black drum, cobia, flounder start to arrive. It would also minimize the bycatch of tautog, which ends May 15th. And a big thing was that it would not have any closures mid-season. So if we wanted to close, if we wanted to take, you know, 21 days from wave three, well, we would still have an open season from June 5th through December 31st, rather than breaking it up if we wanted to take that from wave five. So at this point, I'm asking FMAC, do you want to continue to take those days from wave three and adjust the season accordingly, or would you like to take that from wave five? Or maybe you can take it half from wave three or wave five. It's really up to you. And that's all I have for this presentation.
Do you have any dates?
Yeah, so before I came up here, I looked up 21 days would be June 5th. June 5th through December 31st. That would be 21 days taken from wave three.
Start
of wave three. So the full season's May 15th through December 31st.
There's no way we can take any days, just take them in July?
I had the methodology was approved for wave three and wave five, and the reason I did that is because the harvest was so low during wave six or in wave four that you would have to forfeit a lot more days than 21 to account for those 10,000 pounds.
That's what I'm saying. Take the whole month.
Well, I'd have to take a look at it. I think it's so low that it would be more than that month.
That would be all right if it went in up to August.
Okay. Yes.
Anything other than losing May 15th, any of it. The middle of the summer, when there's plenty of everything else to catch. The problem with going to June 5th instead of May 15th mm-hmm. is, yes, there are some other stuff out there to catch for like small boats and stuff, but the head boats, there aren't.
Okay.
But in July and August. Take all of July and half of August. There's plenty of everything to catch. And that would be much better for the four-hire industry.
Okay. Yeah, I believe all the ways were presented to FMAC, and that they chose to use the two ways that would result in the fewest amount of days that you'd have to forfeit, and that was wave three or wave five. So.
Anybody else on the committee? Preference?
I agree with what Skip was saying. That's going to be the least impact on the head coach. I think we should try to look at that at July and August if you can get enough days there.
Okay.
Rather than impact their fishery.
What about at the end of wave three?
It can be taken from anywhere in wave three.
So that would be like closed from June 7th to...
Absolutely. It can. But that would break up the season, which was...
Yeah, I don't know what the right answer is. I'm just saying.
That could possibly work also.
Okay.
Leave an opening May 15th and then...
Problem is, then you're talking about you have a three-week opening and then it's closed for 3 weeks.
Right. Well, pretty much after your three-week opening, there's not much around anymore.
Yeah.
Does anybody in the audience have an opinion? Tell us how it would affect them. I see none. We're back to here. Can you give us an idea?
When does Tata close? I'm sorry.
May 15th is when Tata closes.
Until?
Oh, think about
that. There's still an overlap, for instance, if we close the last 3 weeks in June. With a closure for Tata and Black Sea Bass.
Rob?
You don't need to have an answer right now. This is going to be a discussion item for the commission tomorrow. Public hearing following in April. So what we can do is Alex can work up the different scenarios that you're talking about, and we can get them out to the committee, and you can give feedback a couple weeks before the April 23rd meeting, like April 10th or 11th, something like that. We'll probably do it by the time we have to. Actually, we have to do a notice. Let me back that up. We have to do a notice the 7th of April. So, but at least that gave you time to look at what the different options are and then you can provide your comments.
Okay.
What are the numbers like for wave 6?
Substantially lower. Wave 6 landings are very small. And
okay.
If I recall, it go into well into November.
Okay.
All right, then. We'll wait for your numbers. Please.
All right. All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Now on to striped bass. We get to leave.
Hello again. So let's see. So I don't know how much you heard, but the ASMSC in February didn't have all the information. Because of the federal shutdown?
Presentation?
Okay, I'm going to get help from someone who's able to help me with this. All right. Okay. All right, thank you, Alex. So now all the information's out. The assessment can be looked at. The peer review was out earlier before the assessment was. It's a lot to go over, but they did look at this last time they met in February, and you can see here what I was talking about earlier in the third bullet, you know, what would reduce the fishing mortality rate. And so that's what the technical committee is working on. Whether it ends up as that exactly, you know, we'll have to wait till May to find out. And then in May, from what it looks from the other states, talking to the other states, the addendum is more prevalent on the minds of most states than the amendment. And there you have it right here that we've got to get to the target, 0.197. And we haven't looked at a ratio yet of what that might be. Last time what the ASMSC did in 2014 was they said there's a 50% probability that if you reduce harvest by 20.5 in the bay and 25% on the coast, there's a 50% probability that you'll get to the target. So there's also the other 50% because that really didn't happen. Now, to be fair, what also has occurred, this was the first, summer flounder and striped bass were the first two species that had the new MRIP, you know, the revised MRIP, and I think that, you know, that obviously played a fact in the assessment. With summer flounder, it actually improved the spawning stock. With striped bass, it didn't. You know, so that's something that was a big change as well. So this is one of the things in Amendment 6. In 1995, came out with what there should be for the threshold. In other words, the amount of biomass where it goes. If you go too long below that threshold, below that safe value of biomass, you start to have impacts on the stock. And the SSB has a pretty steep target. There have been several board members who wonder whether that's the right target, 125% of the 1995 female SSB. And that's why there are calls to also do an amendment to look at these reference points. If you look at where we are, here's where we were in 2013. Here's where we are in 2018. So the values changed much higher, much steeper. There was an increase in what would be the threshold, the target the same way. It was at 72, and now it's up to 114. So things have changed. The fishing mortality rate actually is less conservative a little bit, from 0.22 to 0.24 on the threshold, and a little less conservative than the 0.18, it's now 0.197. This is the fishing mortality rate. These little dots are just the confidence interval around it, but you can see the problem. Here's your problem right here, the problem line, and been above that really 3 years in a row. And so that triggers action by the ASMFC. Spawning stock biomass, you got about 5 years in a row below the threshold, and you know that's obviously a big concern. Frankly, in 2012, when they did the assessment then, the last time, this same trend was showing up with the spawning stock biomass. So this is just an idea of what everyone's going to look at and try and determine how quickly they try and, you know, do improvements to the stock. But I think there are some people, you know, staff included, that we want to make sure they don't just go and say, well, let's raise the coastal size limit to 32 inches, because now you've got more of the Bay, the Hudson, and the Delaware fish that are pouring out onto the coast at, you know, in the Bay it's like 4 years old, some leave and start migrating females. But you've got a lot of fish that aren't recruited to gear, going to be a lot of discards. And the coast is hampered by only having one fish. So they can't change their bag limit. They're already at one, as we are in our coastal fishery. A little look at the fishery here, and you can see in the blue bars the directed trips on a pretty good slide over time. Some of you may remember, but these were the years coming up to about 2006, which are pretty good. Although there were more trips here, the harvest number of fish, you know, really starts to fall off after 2009. And the catch per harvest falls off as well, which, you know, that's not a good sign. It's one thing if the harvest falls off, but if the catch per unit effort's falling off, then that signals a problem. These are the removals I talked about earlier, so harvest plus dead discards. And if you look at that, and I think you got this, except for 2018, I think you had this in an email that was sent around to you. But what you can see is that the harvest was pretty robust all the way till about 2010. And the last 3 years, it's really dropped down. Really, four out of the last 5 years, it's been pretty low. But even though it's preliminary, it's not going to change much for 2018. That just means we had this data by April 15th. And, you know, it will be finalized, but it won't change too much. Discards, not as high as many of the other states, which is something that, again, I'm pretty confident that our recreational discards have never been that high, the dead discards. And then total removals, you can see this drop down. We did look back before MRIP changed. This trend was running about the same. There's no doubt there was a decrease going on even with the older MRIP. So if you look across the states at the same type of information, you see some interesting things. If you just look at harvest, you know, you can see New York, Massachusetts, New Jersey, and Maryland is a big harvest right there. If you look at the dead discards, you can see that Massachusetts has a lot of dead discards. Maryland has a lot of dead discards. Even Connecticut is a fair amount of dead discards. So then you put those together because that's really what determines changes in fishing mortality rate. And you can see that Massachusetts is very high. Maryland is very high, over 2 million fish. And other states are, you know, somewhere a little less, but still New York's almost 700,000. Now, yes, we know this is MRIP data, but I mean, I think even if you fall back to what National Marine Fisheries Service used to tell everyone, which was look at the trends, well, the trends are pretty revealing. So here we have percentage-wise. So Alex put these in percent for you, and I'll go right to the removals. You can see that Maryland has a high percentage, 34%. I may have said 40% earlier, 34%, Massachusetts 17%, and so on. So Virginia's down here 3.61%, and I know more than one person said to me, so hey, we're only at 3.61%. And what I've replied each time is, yeah, but is that where we want to be as a recreational fishery, when I know in the mid-90s and through the mid-2000s, we were usually in the top three states recreationally. So, you know, that's not a consolation. The other things I should point out to you when Alex goes through the options, any of our options are pretty much lowball now, which means that we don't have a lot of fish to work with. So if we do an option like go from a season or a size limit that would reduce harvest or get savings, sometimes it doesn't look like a lot of fish, but still, as you build up, because I don't know how long we're going to be in this situation with the ASMSC, but sometimes when you build up the stock a little bit, then you're saving more fish. And I think what everyone at ASMSC was obsessing about in February was the dead discards. So if they're going to obsess about the dead discards, there needs to be, and this isn't the only fishery that has that problem, there needs to be some activities that will promote less dead discards. This is pretty interesting. This is coming by the harvest of striped bass 36 or greater versus harvest of striped bass less than 36. And you can see that generally there's not a great pattern, but you get to this 2012, and we're not sure why that jumps up so high like that. You know, just 52% of the fish were 36 or greater. It really doesn't seem that it should be that way to any of us. But take that out, you're down here to 1%, greater than 36, 3%. This is MRIP. So MRIP, we do MRIP since 2016 here in the agency. But can you canvas everything you like to canvas? No. You use the sites that the National Marine Fisheries Service says you're going to be at that site. There's been some headway made by Jeff Allen, who coordinates our MRIP, in that he was complaining because he'd have to sit on a site or have one of his techs sit on a site doing private boats, and he'd see charter boats come in, but NIMF was like, nope, you can't do the charter boats, you're on a private boat site. So that has been remedied through Jeff's effort, and I think that's a good thing. So that's pretty much what I have there. I'm going to let Alex go through the options, and I think what we, you know, what we'd like to do is when we get to the options, and you're going to do the recreational options first, correct?
Correct.
Okay, so when you do the recreational options, give your input. As soon as you have your input, we'll take it down and we'll keep things going so the commission has a good report in April.
I do have a question, Rob. Earlier you said that discard mortality in the recreational fisheries around 9%. You said that's been pretty well since in the 80s they considered that. But also since in the 80s they considered in low salinity and high temperature the mortality is close to 100%.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that's needs to be stressed.
Yeah. Oh,
that's fishing in Maryland, low salinity,
yeah,
high temperature. That number is probably extremely low.
Well, I've made it known, talking to both Marty Gary at the Potomac River Fisheries Commission and Mike Luisi at Maryland in our calls, that we've never had a season beyond June 15th. They always have. Their fishery runs from April 15th to December 15th in Maryland. And they actually said, and so I'm not, you know, making any light of this at all, but they actually said, well, maybe that has to be looked at. North Carolina, on the other hand, wants to eliminate, if they can, hook and release in the summertime. So North Carolina is telling us they're out there in 85-degree weather, temperature weather. I don't know what the corresponding water temperature is, but it's all like you're saying. I mean, it's all mortality.
Well, you know, Maryland at one time, when they were in the recovery process back in the 80s, they had a law that if you caught a couple striped bass and you did pull the anchor and leave, you would get a ticket.
Yeah.
I imagine you remember that. That's been a long time ago, but, you know, it's a sad Virginia recreational, 3.6% of the coastal mortality. I don't know where we figure in recruitment. Maryland's number one. They're always number one on the whole coast for recruitment, basically. Chesapeake Bay has been as high as 80% or more of recruitment for the East Coast. You know, they're not doing nothing.
Right.
You know, the background, only 3.6% wasn't even figuring into something. That would just be background, and you weren't even considered in a scientific way. So, you know, I don't have no dog in this fight, I guess I would say, but, you know, Virginia just, somewhere along the line, they got to stand up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not fair, you know, to penalize people who's not causing the problem. And basically, the problem is in Maryland and Massachusetts. New England in general, but Massachusetts by far. So
I think what it'll come, I think you're right, but I think what happens is the way they design their plan, their reduction plan, is small, medium, big, really big, you get that reduction. So if you have small to start with, your reduction is going to be smaller. It has to be proportional. As a matter of fact, I'm hoping that they don't try to do a bay-wide approach, which they did in Addendum 4. In Addendum 4, when we raised size limits from 18 to 20 inches for the recreational fishery, we did it with bay data, and the bay went in with a consolidated approach. But we haven't had a, you know, in a way it's a shame, we haven't had a bay-wide quota system since 2015. So when the ASMSC did Addendum 4, it wiped out that 1997 to 2013 cooperative management. So, but, yeah.
We've been very close to de minimis. De minimis on almost every plane is 2%.
Yeah.
Virginia's not that far over de minimis.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it's really...
We're also looking at big fish, though. We are looking at big fish. I mean, that's... that's looked at, too. So I'm going to let Alex... Thank you. I'm going to let Alex run through the options and appreciate it.
Thank you. I'm going to start by just, talk a little bit about the commercial fishery. So we talked a little bit about performance of the recreational fishery. This is the commercial landings of striped bass from the Chesapeake Bay area from 2009 to 2018. So you'll see that 20.5% drop that Rob was referring to in your Addendum 4. And so when we look at the percentage of quota that's achieved in the last 10 years, It varies anywhere from about 77% to a high of 93% in 2012. The average is just around 86% overall. Next is the Virginia commercial landings of striped bass from the coastal area in the last 10 years. They achieve much higher, actually. The 10-year average is 91%. It's higher in 2016 because we had a slight overage. That's why you see the quota drop down from 138,640 to 136,000. But in 2018, it's back to 138,000. So next is a consideration of some recreational conservation measures. The first option I'm going to be talking to you about today is allowing one trophy-sized fish. The example that we used is 36 inches per angler per year. And so staff has had multiple meetings talking about the logistics of this option, and we find it's very feasible. It would be done through a permitting or a tagging system to kind of flush out what's going on. If you look at the Virginia striped bass citations, so a Virginia striped bass citation is either 40 pounds or 44 inches total length, you'll see that we see an increase in citations through about a high anywhere from about 2006. We also see a very high amount in about 2011. But following 2011, we really see a sharp decline in the number of citations. And part of that is due to the coastal fishery just disappearing. You'll see that in the shaded region that has the bars through it, that is coastal citations. And then we see about 2014 that they just disappear. And so you're really just seeing an overall decline in the number of citations in the last 5 to 10 years.
So we really want your discussion on this.
Yeah.
Because this is important, as I mentioned earlier. Yes, Demerick is 3.62 or 3.66, but big fish are something that is of interest to reduce that, and we have met as a staff, and we think we can accommodate a system so that we would have tags for recreational fishermen. We can talk more about how to do that next time, but you know, this is something that may be difficult at first without some help to figure out what the savings might be because of the fact that MRIP doesn't really concentrate on each individual the way we would like it, you know, like it to do, and we don't know who would get the tags, and we understand that there could be situations where, let's just keep it to two people in a family, got the tags, but only one person is doing harvesting. Of course, that would not be lawful, but you know, that would be something that you know would happen in some cases. So at first, we were puzzled as to how to really go about this. Adam has some ideas that next time we can share, but this is looked at as a situation where why are we still harvesting a lot of large striped bass? The reports are that that's still the case. What happens when you have a fishery that's truncated is your catchability changes. Anglers are very good at finding big fish, even if there's less fish than there was 10 years ago. So this is something to get your comments on.
Jeff. Tom.
Do you have the statistics for the distribution of intercepted fish by size?
We can get those through MRIP.
I mean, that would be, I think, meaningful and potentially per vessel trip. It should be in the data. Or per intercept, the number of fish over 36 inches per intercept would be an interesting number. I mean, that's a vessel thing,
yeah.
But because you've got vessel limits, you know, without knowing, you know, some people never will catch a 36 inch fish. some people who go out eeling all the time, that's what they're targeting, and they'll catch all, they'll catch a relative lot of them. But you get guys in the rivers that are just casting lures and stuff and dragging stretches, they're likely not going to catch a lot of 36-inch fish.
I think this is, I mean, I think option one is very drastic. I mean, you go out on a Saturday in December, there's 200 boats. I mean, you kill it that are eeling, you kill an entire fishery. I mean, so one per year maybe.
I mean,
part of the
problem I see with this fishery is exactly that we have figured out how to go out eeling. When I first started fishing for stripers in the 2000s, late 1990s, we were dragging stretches and wire line. That's all we should. I tell you, and then we got into the big drone spoons and stuff, and hardly anybody was eeling back then. And then everybody started eeling, and everybody started catching these really big fish all the time. And I think that's part of, and it's up and down the coast, people are figuring out how to do it and getting better and better at it, and that's what kills a fishery like this. And I don't know what the right answer is, but that's where my concern is.
Well, I think one of the things we have to consider here is one a year better than a maximum size limit that's less than 36 inches? So you get none a year.
Yeah.
One per boat per day or something.
I don't think that's going to cut it for us.
I mean, look at this chart, and you know, you can take it with a grain of salt, but there's not as many 36 plus fish. I mean, you can look at the year classes and figure out why. You know, the 2011 year class isn't that big, hasn't made it to that size yet. The 2015 year class definitely, you know, it's just getting started. So then you have to go back quite a ways, like 2007. So I think the ASMSC starts their fully recruited fishing mortality rate on maybe a 10, Alex, do you know?
Sounds about right. It's about 10.
But the problem with this is that we know it will have savings and help the broodstock. You can wonder whether that saves the fish for someone else, right? That when the fish gets out migrating, that someone else is going to get it if they don't have a like regulation. But at the same time, we're trying to find this information, but you know, there's a certain amount of return to the Chesapeake Bay of these fish. So, you know, you can think of maybe waiting until we get the information. What Tom was talking about a little bit, I don't know about the per trip, but we can get the size composition.
So for now, you want us just to review all these and see if they're acceptable without more detail on how each would be conducted?
Yeah, I mean, it'd be good to know whether the committee thinks that this is something that needs to be addressed on these options.
All right.
I mean, that's what's really wanted here.
So worth considering.
You know, not so much the mechanics, because some of these we don't have all the mechanics yet figured out. But we can get closer. I don't think we're going to quite get to that trip level that Tom's talking about. But, you know, really, if you're a fisherman, you're not going to like some of these options, to say the least.
It looks like we're in a position we have to do some things that we're not going to like.
Jeff?
Ernie was next.
I think it would have been helpful to have coastal regulations by other states. Some states have a 34-inch minimum, or they did. I don't know if they still do. Some states have a no-take size in the middle, but you can keep them over 38 inches. And now you're talking about limiting people in Virginia to one fish a year, and they're allowed two a day of that size fish.
Well, are they 3.66%? It comes back to where the recreational fishery is today. Do we help the recreational fishery? Should that be considered? And that's for you to decide what you feel about that, not today. But you know, that's the issue. But you're going to see your no take coming up, and other options. Again, keep in mind, we're trying to canvas you so that you can give us the feedback. So anything you give feedback on, I mean, we'll follow through on with the commission. But realize when the dust settles, I have a pretty good idea that the ASMSC is going to impact us just like it's going to impact the other states. And then it becomes every state trying to figure out how to have the options that can satisfy the ASMSC without really being a crippling type of option. And that's what we're trying to do. So we're just getting started.
Okay.
So I'm looking at these percentages on the sheet that was handed out, and I'm seeing 4%, 6%, 15% on one of them.
Yeah.
What kind of number do you think, and I know it's not in stone yet, but we're talking about?
I think you're close to that, probably.
Close to 15, 20%?
Somewhere in there.
Okay, so when we start talking about some of these options that are 5%, that's going to be one thing that we have to do and others.
Right.
Okay, I just wanted to...
Right.
Would you like us to vote on each option as to whether it should be considered or not?
No, just your comments right now, and then, like I said, we're going to be back together in April and May and probably June. I say June because I think if there's an annual meeting of the ASMSC and they go forward with the addendum to be implemented in 2020, that means we'll probably have to get proposals in by July 1, something like that. Sounds reasonable. So we'll have a few more meetings, but no votes on that now.
Okay, with our time constraints, would it be appropriate to ask for just a raising of hands of anybody in the audience that thinks this is one that should be considered?
It's a snapshot, but sure.
That's what we're after. Anybody in the audience think we should consider one fish over 36 inches a year per recreational fisher?
Well, that's not your only fish.
Yeah,
that's just right. One fish over 36.
Exactly.
Help yourselves to the 35.99, 34, yeah.
Okay. All right, seeing no hands, I'm just going to say we will include this as a.
Well, Chairman, I have a question.
Sure, Doug.
I think it's very important. And I asked Rob this some months past.
All right,
Doug. What effect does the Nova Scotia have on the striped bass on the Atlantic Coast?
Beg your pardon?
The fishermen in Nova Scotia, they catch them by the tons, 50, 60, 70 pounds. I don't know whether the fish coming out of the Hudson River or the Delaware Bay or wherever, they're on that coast going offshore. Does ASMSC consider them a partner or whatever you want to call them in that regulatory thing?
No, they don't.
So they can have effect on the coastal fishery, but they don't have to give up nothing or they don't have to fly by it. Is that what you're saying?
We don't have any information from there that I know. Do you know anything?
Have you tried to get in it?
I've never heard it discussed. It's just in the coastal stock in North Carolina. Never much talk about Nova Scotia.
Well, my partner and I, back in the late 70s and early 80s, we bought tons and tons of them from up there. They glutted New York market, or New York wouldn't take that size, and we bought them and froze them and sold them later on to the fish buyers and Washington and Baltimore. So I know they have the fish there. So if it's in the coastal thing, I can't understand why the ASMSC hadn't pursued that. Do they not know the scientists involved? I'm sorry to interject that, but it's an important point, I think.
It's something that needs to be considered, Doug, but we need to work on what Virginia's going to do. Faced with where we are, I think it's a good thing to be considered. Appreciate you bringing it up. Anybody else? All right, option two.
Okay, so recreational option two would implement a non-offset circle hook provision when using live or dead bait. So you may be familiar with Maryland's non-offset circle hook provision in place when live lining or using bait. We've heard from other states, Massachusetts and New Hampshire, that they're very interested and implementing a circle hook provision. And so the whole idea around this really is just to reduce hooking mortality, or, you know, reduce the chance that fish becomes gut hooked, and just really to increase the survival of fish that are released either too small or you've already reached your bag limit and are let go. That's really all I have for recreation for the offset circle hook provision. Do you want to have any discussion on that?
Point of clarification, what is Maryland's regulation relative to circle hooks? I thought they withdrew it at the last minute.
No, they never put in the charter component at the last minute. They never put in the charter component. They only did it for the angler component.
So it's only recreationals, and the charter boats don't have to use...
Well, they pulled out at the last minute, That was discussed at the ASMSC.
And for the recreational side, is it non-offset? Does it specify non-offset circle hooks in Maryland?
No, I think Maryland, Maine... Mass is looking at it, but not for their charter or head hook. And Alex said earlier today that he could show what this effect would be, the way Maryland did before they pulled off that charter stuff.
Mm-hmm. I don't know the number off the top of my head, but we do have the analysis that Maryland has put forward showing what that circle hook mortality would be for fish at release. And we could propose to do something very similar and get an idea of what savings would look like using a circle hook provision.
So if we were to go forth with this, this would apply in Virginia to both recreationals and the charter boats and industry?
For the entire recreational sector.
So we would be... We would not be in line with what Maryland is doing.
In a way, no, because they have a slightly different exception for their charter fleet.
Does anybody on the committee have a real problem with circle hooks, non-offset circle hooks? I think we can consider that an option to study, consider.
Okay.
I happen to love them myself.
You guys are that.
This takes a little training.
Right.
At least to consider it further anyway. Right.
I know a lot of people yielding already use circle hooks quite often, just because the way circle hooks work, fish hits, it strikes, and it pulls, and it already hooks itself in the corner. So recreational option 3. This is to establish a maximum vessel limit of 3 fish. So striped bass are regulated under size, possession limit, and a season. We don't implement any vessel constrictions on them. This option has the greatest impact in terms of savings out of all the recreational options that we're proposing. It varies anywhere from 9% all the way up to 19%, varying on which year that you look at. If you're going out there by yourself, you won't be constrained to this 3 fish vessel limit because the maximum fish you can keep is 2. However, if you have 2 people on your boat and your max possession limit could be 4, now it's going to be 3. You can only keep 3 because there's a vessel limit in place.
And if you're a charter boat with a 6-pack and 2 crew, it's 3?
Right, right.
I think you're going to have...
Any other states have a limit of 3 or 4 fish per boat, or would we be unilateral in that?
I'm not aware of any other states that have a vessel limit in place. We would be proposing something new that hasn't been done before. But it certainly would have a lot of savings having a 3 fish vessel limit. So.
There would be a lot of savings because there'd be a lot of people not going, I think.
Well, it's just because it's also saying that there's a lot of trips that are catching more than 3 fish, and that's why we have such high savings. So that's when you put something in
favor for cobia management.
Right.
Cobia weigh 40 pounds each, not 40 pounds for a 20-inch fish.
Yeah, any
I think that this is fraught with issues, and I'm concerned about it, just from a fairness to recreational fishermen.
Ken's got a 35-foot boat.
Yeah.
You go out striper fishing, you're going to spend $300 a day or $200 a day easy to gas. And he's going to take out four or five of his friends. Me, I got a 16-foot boat. I go out, I'm going to spend $15, $20 on gas, and I might be able, I can take one other person, maybe two people in my boat, and go fishing. Mm-hmm. It's not fair. It'd be fair to me, but it would not be fair to Ken. Right. It would not be fair to the charter fleet either, and I think that they would just have a total conniption about it.
Okay.
I think it'd be safe to say that we aren't in favor of this. Let's see if we can get to the 17% without this one.
Okay.
All right. Any more comments on that one?
The problem is...
It would be difficult to get to a 15 to 20% number without something like this.
Or a draconian closure.
I'd just hate to see us do something that's unilateral. But we're the only ones doing it.
Why would anybody rent a charter boat if three people's going to house and no fish?
That's an excellent point.
You know that you had a bad day before you even leave the dock. Three of you going to have nothing.
Yep. Okay. Well, these are all good points that...
And like I said, if you're going in a river...
Along with that, I'll support it. But
would it be possible to say...
They have four.
Three fish over a certain size limit.
I'm sorry, what was that?
Would it be possible to say you can only have three fish over 28 inches, something like that? Would that give us some savings and still allow other people on the boat to catch something, take something home?
Yeah, we can consider it. It's we already have one, where the weight possession limit already works is one fish can only be above 28 inches per person. So unless you have more than three people on that boat, that's where you would see savings. Otherwise, it would be the way status quo is right now.
Well, I'm worried about the six-pack.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you said look at an option where you could have possibly just three fish over 28 inches?
Over a certain limit to allow everybody else to keep something at least.
Okay.
What if you exempt the charter boats and just put it on recreational boats?
If you accept the charter boats, then you're looking at people like Kent, who's a recreational fisherman with a big boat. And why does he get the same kind of resource? You know, not much of the same exception. I'm struggling looking at these numbers, saying how are you going to get a combination of anything that's going to get us a 15-20% reduction without just saying we're going to shut down on December 1st. Or we're going to shut down,
when you have
that coming too.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
Yeah.
Seriously,
we should have a moratorium on the coast for 2 years.
Well, believe it or not, one of the leading recreational groups told me in a meeting we should have a moratorium. Now I hear talk about unilateral, and I don't know what unilateral means just because we're doing options for Virginia that will meet what the ASMSC wants. So, if to answer your question, maybe part of these we can't string together to make a full complement, but maybe part of these we can use to defray the expected ASMSC reductions. And so we'll do whatever we can do.
Yeah, and what you just said, and I want to make at least what I believe is going to happen from a procedural standpoint, we're not going to do this unilaterally. ASMFC is going to say you will do this much of a reduction, and we're going to have to figure out how to do it. And they're going to give the same percentage reduction, in theory, to all the other states. And the challenge is everybody's going to try to do it where they get as much as they can anyway, which is the way we always work it. And there are times when that just is not enough.
I was going to say, you talk about being fair, I would think somebody would want to catch three fish versus no fish for 2 years.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I'm saying what's good for the fish.
Well, I heard pushback up there and things like that. And, I remember the 32-day seasons that we had from 1990 through 1994. And I remember when we had a 36-inch max period to take care of the 1982 year class, which was the only really good year class they were trying to protect. So, yeah, you know, it's not going to be fun, but the idea, again, is that if there's something that we can do that you either like or that you can spin off of and say, why don't you look at this, that's what we want to do.
All right. Option five, I believe, was next.
Option four is a maximum vessel limit of 4 fish. So we don't see the large amount of savings like we saw with the 3 fish vessel limit. But again, we do see anywhere about that 5 to 7% harvest and savings in harvest. So again, this would be a vessel limit constriction, not quite as strict as a 3 fish vessel limit, but something to consider. So does everyone kind of have the same feelings about the vessel?
I think you run into the same problem with the charter boat industry.
Okay.
Anybody disagree?
I will say that is when the larger fish are in the bay, and historically, I don't know what it is anymore, but and if we have to take if we have to do something, that may be an option we want to consider.
We're on option four.
I'm thinking option five. Sorry. One step ahead. What he said. Sorry.
I'm not trying to get into the sector division here at all, but maybe what we need to see next time is the impact of the charter boat compared to the private boat, or do the sectors we can do onshore. I don't know who's catching much onshore anymore, but you know, so we can do that before you worry about what this impact might be on the charter, as opposed to, you know, what it might be if they have to go through it. So, I mean, I think it may be something that everyone would say, well, if there's X amount of impact, then it might make sense not to be 4 fish. I don't know how it turns out. Charter boat historically, this is charter, historically has been a small component in the past. Summer flounder and striped bass. Now, whether that's due to the survey, I don't know. But if you think about it, I mean, I don't know, you know, Skip could tell us how many trips he takes. And then we kind of know how many head boats there are, and we know how many charter boats there are. I mean, we could really flush this out if you want us to.
It would be worth hearing if you have the time to do it, please.
We don't mess with them, Rob.
Skip doesn't mess with striped.
No, the head boats do not stripe or fish.
Well, that solves that trick.
How about the ones in the Navy?
Kevin, he doesn't anymore.
He did.
But
since I hadn't been here on the bridge at all.
It's a charter.
Yeah, but it's a 6-pack charter boat.
Charter.
So
we could figure something out.
Center console charter, guys.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if there's anything there, okay. If there's not, fine. I mean, it is all one sector. And I know there was a lot of upsetment, you know, about other species like blue line trout.
So one thing, if you do go and start saying, well, we're going to exempt the charter fishery.
Not exempt.
Increase their vessel limit, or make it a one. If you make it an increased vessel limit, so it's 6 fish maybe, that you can. I'm saying this for discussion. I don't know that I agree with it. Then that's fine, but you can't make it a 6 fish limit where the crew is 2 of those fish.
No.
If it's a 6 fish limit and they got 4 people on the chart on that charter, they get 4 fish. I mean, it's a.
All right.
I'm glad you said that, because we didn't think about that in all our conversations. But
I mean, one of the things that I have heard.
Come up another stage.
Yeah. One of the things that I have heard in the past, and I'm not saying that. I'm sure it happens, or has happened, is charter guys will go out in the morning with a charter and they'll bring back one of those 2 fish per person, 4 fish for the boat, and give them to their customers, and go out in the afternoon for a charter and come back with 4 fish for the boat and give them to their customers. So they've effectively fished 2 limits. I've also heard of recreational people carrying the fish back and leaving them on their docks and going back out too, but that's another matter. But I mean, it's the same kind of thing.
Yeah, I think 3 or 4 fish for a private boat might be a little more palatable than three or four for a charter six-pack.
Yeah, we should look at the data and
okay.
then have this conversation.
Appreciate that.
It's hard to do without, you know, it's something we didn't look at
okay.
yet.
Or just one fish per person? That's not on here. I'm not seeing that, right?
That's going to come up.
Yeah, we have about one
only,
fish.
Yeah, but only for, I'm saying year-round.
Just for those days.
Just to,
go ahead, Alex.
We're trying okay. to get to a certain threshold.
Yeah.
So.
Because that only, because option five, which says,
right.
it's only for December 10th or 31st. If you're trying to get to a 15% threshold or whatever, what if that one fish possession limit was the entire year?
Right. Well, at least 85% of our harvest comes from November and December, so.
Well, that's only two-thirds of December there. So what if it was one fish for November, December, and then where would that number be? It would obviously be higher than 5%, would it be?
Right.
And if you did have a charter boat that had six people and you get to take six fish, I mean, you know.
Well, that's something we'd have to flush out and look into. So this option is just a one fish possession limit from December 10th through December 31st in the Chesapeake Bay area only. Before December 10th, it's status quo. Season size possession limit, everything is the same. Sorry, not the season, size and possession limit. But from December 10th to December 31st, you can only keep one fish. So again, that's, you know, it ranges from year to year, but we're looking at somewhere about that 5 to 7% in savings. It is just a one fish possession limit during that small frame, but you still have to keep those really large fish. You still have tournaments, so.
You can still cull okay. fish, but you're only allowed to keep one, so you want the biggest one.
Well, after the towing issue is resolved.
What?
I said, well, hopefully after the towing issue is resolved, that won't be an issue.
What do you mean? Taking the fish out of the cooler, it's on ice, and throwing it over the side because you got a 36-inch fish, and the fish in the cooler is 24 inches.
Right. Well,
I mean, that stuff happens.
You're never
it happens.
That when you got slot sizes.
So.
All right. Please.
This was in place in 2006, by the way. This is a retread.
Yeah.
Yeah, just a question point. Because trying to figure out how many charter boats there are that target striped bass is hard. There's 144 of them that have striped bass permits. Doing some research, I found about 40 charter boats that pretty much fish all of the charter season, and I'll use one as an example, Midnight Sun, who fishes 120 days a year. So if you say that he has... six people on his boat plus two crew, total number of fish, total number of days he's fishing, say that he doesn't catch his limit all the time, so drop it by 20%. He's still over 2,000 fish a day for one boat, I mean a year for one boat.
Okay. Could you give us your name, please, for the record?
Mike Lightfoot. I'm a commercial and recreational.
Can you pick that up, Ethan, or not?
On the audio, I can hear it, but I'm not
sure. No, I'm pretty sure I'm closer to the mic. But
yeah.
Are you picking me up?
I'd have to play back the recording.
All right, don't do that. I guess I forgot that we've got to get up there to the mic.
You probably do need to be up there for the audio to come in clear. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Everybody heard that, I hope. All right. What's next?
Would you like to discuss this option at all?
Which one are we on now?
Option five, the one fish possession limit.
Certainly something we should discuss.
Yes.
Right.
And I do agree with Bob where you should see how more saving go up if you do it for the whole month of November
right.
and December.
We can do that. We didn't want to have that
right.
one fish for much longer than what we're proposing. Just to
my point is, if you're saying that the number that we have to get to is 15 to 20%, if we went all year with
mm-hmm.
one fish
right.
over 18 inches or whatever size
mm-hmm.
it would be.
Yep, and we don't know what that number exactly is, but if it is 15%, then we would have to.
Get us there, and that might be for everybody to understand.
Or,
right.
Yeah.
And to me, if you're doing a charter and you've got six people, everybody gets to take one home. I mean, I think that kind of covers a lot of bases and would have a pretty good savings. And that maybe, I don't know what the other states are, but that could be something. I mean, they could follow that too.
And when you do the math,
I mean, that's easy, that makes sense, and there isn't date changes and stuff, you know.
So,
I don't know.
Okay, Tom.
When you do the math for that, one of the considerations you should maybe do is that early in the season, the October, say, till the middle of November, it's a lot of fishing in the rivers where it's a 20-inch fish, 18-inch fish is not a good fish is 24 inches.
Oh, yeah.
And so you may want to consider, say, from November 15th to the end of the season, you go to one fish, and from October 1st to November 15th, even if you make it a 18 to 28-inch slot,
okay,
with one over or something like that, that might be a good way to go.
Okay.
Because it's tough to say you're going to go out and spend the money and time and go out and get to bring back one 18-inch or one 20-inch fish because that's all that's in that river that day.
Okay. So recreational option six is to eliminate the bay and the coastal trophy season and establish a 28-inch maximum size limit for both fish in the Chesapeake Bay area through December 15th. From December 16th through December 31st, one fish of the two fish possession limit may be greater than 28 inches in the Chesapeake Bay. So what this option is saying is that for the entire year through December 15th, the maximum size limit is 28 inches. Fish can be 20 inches or 28 inches, 22 or 26. It cannot be larger than 28. However, from December 16th to December 31st, it's status quo. It's exactly how it's set it up. Set up right now. So what we're doing is we're putting a maximum size limit on the season up to December 16th. And then when we look at the savings, it varies, but you know, it's anywhere from, it's very low. Now 2018 was a very low year for all states, but it's anywhere from about 5 to 11%, right around that 7% range. So, you know, it still gives people the opportunity to catch that really big fish during when they're available, but if they do come into them earlier before December 16th, those fish would be safe.
When are most of the tournaments? November,
December.
Or December?
Okay. Really December.
So this would put the end to the tournaments, I would think.
No, because, well, it depends on when that tournament is. If it's December 16th to the end of the year, they certainly can have a tournament. If it's before December 16th, then they could have, you know, I know a lot of billfish tournaments do release you know, I don't know how it exactly works, but I do know that they have release tournaments for other species. So it's something that could still happen. But if the tournament's after December 16th, it certainly can happen.
Right. How critical to the committee members is the trophy season?
How many fish are caught during the trophy season last year?
Well, number six is eliminate the bay and coastal trophy season.
We don't, you know.
Very low.
Not real good success.
So most of these savings come from
2,000 would be December. One of the higher estimates. 2,000 fish.
I mean,
my concern with this from a recreational fishing industry standpoint is I thought there were tournaments that were starting in like Thanksgiving weekend.
The tournaments are the first, they start the first weekend in December. They're basically every weekend in December.
Right.
But not Christmas, because that's Christmas and people have family obligations. So you really got about 3 weeks that they happen. And they are the first 3 weeks of December. So if you did it on the 16th, that would affect that.
And we have another option that's coming up that's similar to this, except it goes through November, the 28-inch max only goes through November 30th. So this may appeal to the tournament. So it would be still status quo options from December 1st through to the end of December.
You know, realistically, if you look at this year, that would knock out all the tournaments.
Yeah,
it would knock them all out.
Okay. Though recreational option 7, establish a November 1st through December 31st no-take slot limit. So this is the slot limit that we were referring to earlier in the Chesapeake Bay area, whereby there's no harvest between 28 inches and 36 inches, but one fish can be 36 inches or greater. Right now, one fish is allowed to be any size greater than 28 inches. So what this would imply is that during November 1st through December 31st, that any fish greater than 28 inches or less than 36 inches would have to be released.
Are you looking at something different than we are? Because what you gave us is 34.
Right. So that's been updated. So it's now through 36.
Okay.
So why isn't this starting on October 1st?
We geared this around when harvest is greatest, when we can generate the
but
most
it's,
savings.
It's a lot simpler to tell the anglers, this is your bag limit for the season.
Agreed, yeah.
With that.
For the entire season?
And it's probably not that much of a savings, but...
Right.
Protecting, getting some fish into the breeding stock is a good thing.
Okay.
Keeping them there.
And we can adjust that for the entire season, certainly look into it.
What size fish is considered a spawning female?
28 inches.
Sounds like
and
that.
The ones that are really big are really, really productive.
What size
inch,
is really big?
40 to 50 inch fish.
Come to the microphone, please, and tell us who you are.
Makes me reluctant to walk up. All right, again, I'm Mike Lightfoot. I'm a commercial waterman. I have gillnet quota in Virginia, and I also have Potomac quota. I'm on some of the Potomac PRFC committees. And I'm also a recreational fisherman, and I save some of my quota to fish hook and line down below 42, so I'm where all the eelers are. So I have a lot of experience there. So my question was, what size is considered a spawning female? And you said 28 inches.
28 because inches is the minimum size when they spawn, isn't it? Like 50% of them spawn.
And then you said...
28 inches is considered by the ASMFC to be a migrant fish. That's
yeah.
The
okay.
So in the theme of protecting the SSB, what are the size fish that are really the most prevalent to protect? 28 to 36 or over 36? So that was my question.
I think that I don't know.
Well, the bigger they get, the better they spawn, but
yeah.
The more eggs
and
they get.
Eggs are higher quality when they get the really big.
I just checked with Adam. So four is where they start. That's the maturation, and some fours leave the bay, too. Not that many proportionally, but that's 24 to 28 inches, so that's the background there.
Thank you.
Yeah, by nine years of age, females are completely mature. So it depends on the age, but starts at four, and by nine, they're completely mature.
Can they get too old to reproduce?
That's a good question. The larger females seem to be more fecund. They seem to have more eggs, but can they get too old? I mean, that's a good question. I'm not sure that we know the answer to that.
All right. We've had some of the largest striped bass that we've gotten for the sample in wintertime fishery there full of eggs. That would they have spawned, but they sure had eggs in them.
Okay.
I don't know how we got on this, but I think it depends whether the eggs, how viable the eggs are. So they can spawn. 30 is supposedly the max age, but I guarantee you, if you got a fish about 30, and I think, Adam, you've had some 24s? 29s? Okay, so I guarantee you look at the 29s and looked at the eggs themselves, they probably wouldn't be as, fertile and vibrant as maybe a 20-year-old.
What size fish is that, Adam, the 29
the,
years?
The 29-year-old looking at 43 inches. 28-year-old, 25-year-old, 24, varies from 43 to 50 inches, so larger fish varies.
Where did you, for option 7, where did the number 36 come from? Why 36?
That's a size, or trophy fish, trophy-sized fish.
Trying to get greater savings to do bigger fish, you could raise that number. I mean, obviously, people, anglers are going to want to be able to keep a, you know, true trophy, like a Citation Knot, which is, I think, 42 or something, but I don't know.
I think on future questions and comments, we need to raise our hands first, whether it be in the audience or at the table. All right. Any more comments on this option?
Following on with what he said, I think that one of the things you want to consider when you present this again is the savings for, because we're going to have to be looking at something pretty draconian, 36, 38, 40, 42-inch fish, where does it start to taper off for the savings?
Okay, so range.
Yeah, I mean, you could give me a nice table for that.
That bring us to option
Option 8.
Okay.
So, very similar to option 6 that we discussed. However, there would be a 28-inch maximum size limit through November 30th, not December 15th. And one fish or the two fish possession limit may be greater than 28 inches through the month of December. Savings are very similar. Let me look at option 6. Sorry, wrong direction. So the savings aren't quite as great as option 6 because the maximum size limit is only going through November 30th instead of December 15th, but we still see some savings anywhere from, you know, not much in 2018, but again, that was a very low year for everyone, anywhere from 4 to 10%. So this would still allow those tournaments that you discussed that happen during the month of December, but it would be putting a maximum size limit during the rest of the year. For the rest of the year.
But they would be able to have one fish over 28.
They would be able to have one fish over 28 inches from December 1st to December 31st.
Okay. Is that worth considering leaving on the list, gentlemen?
Sure, but I don't think it's... Oh, sorry.
That's okay.
I don't think it's... I think that a better option for the fish would be to have the no-take slot.
Okay.
No-take slot? Okay.
Yeah. Anybody else? I mean, it was a well-understood option when we did it back in the... 2000s, mid-2000s. Anglers appreciated that one. And it also stops the concept of hybriding your fish and culling. Because you get a fish that's 32 inches, it's going back over the side because you can't keep it no matter what.
Okay. Any more thoughts on option 8?
Apparently not.
Okay. Option 9 is to allow one fish per vessel to be greater than 28 inches in the Chesapeake Bay area. So you're familiar with the current possession limit and the size limit. This is set up very similar to cobia, where you're protecting those larger fish. So all the savings that you see in this option are protecting those fish greater than 28 inches through a maximum vessel limit. So one fish per vessel can be larger than 28 inches. The savings here are just around 1 to 2%.
Jeff.
Please.
I'm really confused. First off, I think it's a terrible idea because it invites high grading and culling. But I'm confused as to why that's 2% when the option to say we're going to have a no-take slot limit that starts at 28 inches and allows you to catch bigger fish is a 5% savings.
Because this is per vessel.
I'm still confused, but okay. I think I think that having a one fish per vessel above a minimum, above 28 inches, is absolutely inviting cooler culling.
Okay.
I mean, it's a very small statement for the statistics you've used, and it just doesn't sound like a good idea to me.
What if we were to raise that maximum size, that one fish per vessel, to maybe 36 inches or something.
Whatever
like that.
You do, it's going to be, people are going to say, I got a fish bigger than that, I'm going to throw this one back. Huh? That's the real problem when you get to one actually really big fish, nice fish. Especially if you've got just this small savings on it.
Huh. I think this was proposed because it...
As much as I hate to do it, I have to agree with Tom on that.
Okay. Yeah.
If it were, if this were 7 or 8% savings, we'd talk about it.
Yeah.
But it's just.
Yeah, I mean, this was really proposed because it doesn't. I mean, it's really saving those large fish. It may not be many savings, but it's saving large fish. It still allows you to have tournaments. It still allows you to.
Especially when you get in some of these tournaments.
Well, it still allows you to keep one fish.
One. That's my point.
But when you're in that tournament,
if you high grade in a tournament like that,
I beg your pardon?
If you tried to high grade in a tournament like that, that would be not within the rules. It shouldn't be.
Yeah, so it's not a lot of savings, but these savings are larger fish. So.
All right, let's consider it.
Okay, just consider it. All right. So this is the last option, and it's just to eliminate the bay and coastal season. So right now, eliminate the bay and coastal trophy season. So currently, striped bass must be 36 inches or greater to harvest during the trophy season. This is reported to us through our spring trophy permitting system. It's not a lot of fish. Again, it started in 2015. When we look at total savings, that's harvest and dead discards, and I might add that these are expanded numbers using the reported rate that we have. We're looking at, you know, maybe 300 to 400 fish. It's very small. It's about a third of a percent in terms of savings when you compare it to the overall landings in a given year.
Okay. On this option, would the season be closed if it weren't for the trophy season?
It would be closed.
Okay.
Well, it would be closed from May 1st to May 15th, May 15th to June 15th.
Correct. You still have your May. Yes, you're correct, but you would not allow to be able to keep fish greater than 28 inches.
Okay. Any thoughts?
So.
Let's keep that in the mix then.
Okay. All right, so next is talking about commercial options, commercial measures. The first option that we're going to talk about is to shorten the commercial season that starts on January 16th. So on average, about 46% of all of our harvest in the bay comes from February and March. And if we were to adjust the season, we're not necessarily saying that we would reduce harvest, but we could shift harvest around the availability of large fish when they come into the bay. So just look here. So again, 40% through February and March, and then it really tapers off and then picks back up in November and December. And this is just looking at the commercial harvest along the coast. Again, almost all of our harvest along the coast, 99%, comes from April and May. Very little to no harvest in the ocean in November. I believe we used to have quite a bit of harvest in the earlier months along the ocean back, 10 years ago, but we're just not seeing that harvest anymore. These are much larger fish, on average about 19 pounds compared to the bay, which is about 6 pounds. So, that's really up for discussion if you would consider shortening the season to achieve some conservation effort.
From the commercial guys?
What do we achieve by shortening the season for kind of conservation?
Well, I think the idea behind this is to adjust the season around the availability of the spawning stock from the larger fish. So if we were to adjust the season around when we know they're here, maybe the effort would be shifted towards other size fish rather than targeting those large fish. Maybe they're not targeting specifically those large fish, but if the season's around those large fish, then they cannot harvest during that time.
Because that's when they're available to catch. That's why we're catching up there on that time.
Right, exactly.
Well, we need to see some more numbers, I would think. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, sir. Please.
Okay. Hello, my name is Charles Dryden. I'm a commercial fisherman. About the only way you could do it would be January. Just go back to February 1st, which will give you 8.64. But as for February, March, and April, it's really hard to shut them three down because that's, as it shows, that's when everybody's trying to get their quota then. Because your water temperature is getting ready to change too. Because when the water temperature goes to change, you try to do it in the cooler months, so there's no loss. But when you start getting into the end of May and June and stuff like that, it's hard to fish them. I mean, you've got to fish your nets every 12 hours and you've got to stay on them all the time. But January would be doable by me. I mean, I don't want to speak for anybody else, but that would work for me.
I appreciate that very much. Yeah.
Earlier, Rob put out a motion for nay at MFC, and it was all about recreational, this far mortality and thing. Is there a similar one for commercial that we haven't seen?
That was the only motion.
The motion, well, it didn't even discuss commercial, so that's something we're just voluntarily doing.
Well, put the motion up, Alex.
So the motion is, this motion is more specific to looking at examples to achieve the target from the recreational fishery. But, you know, as the ASMSC process moves forward, there would likely be something similar put forward for the commercial fishery. They're just addressing the recreational fishery at this point.
Yeah, I was on ASMSC for like 15 years, I think. And they are painstakingly in motions, and Rob can tell you, you've probably been to enough of them now. I've seen them argue for 30 minutes over one word. And you have too, Rob. You know how that goes. I'm just amazed that they don't mention that in there specifically when they do address the recreational specifically.
This was a tug of war going on in February. In February, they didn't even know whether they would bring anything about striped bass because of that federal shutdown. They didn't have the assessment. All they had was a summary of the assessment by the technical committee chair, and they elected to go forward with that. So when Doug, who you know Doug, when Doug Grout made this motion, it was, what he said was, I just want to get things started. So what's going to happen in May is then we're going to get the more specifics. This was just to get the technical committee started, which they have. And so, no, we're not doing anything voluntary. We're getting ready like we are for the recreational situation on how we can have conservation equivalency for the commercial fishery, which is going to be harder because of the ITQ situation, just like we're trying to do conservation equivalency for the recreational fishery. So where it all ends up, I don't know. Obviously, we'll know more. April 30th, actually, is the meeting. April 30th, not May. So.
Thank you.
Yeah. Be concerned with shortening the season, because if you let guys catch them when the fish are there, they catch their quota and their gear comes out of the water. If you shorten the season, or don't allow them to catch it then, and you shift it to other times, it's going to be more gear in the water, longer soak time, longer. I think we're going to drive up our dead discards that way. So I don't know if shortening the season is the right way. It pushes everything. It's like the buffalo run. That's that fella did with the, you know, that it drives the price down when you get everybody doing it at one time. So I don't know if that's the right way to go about it or not.
Okay.
Right now they're going to catch everything. The way it's set up, from 18 inches to 4 foot. As soon as they catch their quota, they're all done. There's no discard mortality, there's nothing. The nets are out of the water. I'm one of the few people that fish longer than that because where I'm on the coast, we have bluefish come along behind it, smooth dogs and things. But on the bay, most especially, as soon as they catch the quota, they're done. So you won't have any wasted fishery. And by just say you want to move them away from February and March, which is their most important time. So you want to move them into April and May. Now you're going to have the fish leave in the bay. The water is going to be warm enough that they're going to have drive that they probably get on a smaller net. They won't do it when the water is cold, but they will when the water is warm. So they're going to be throwing them overboard because there's a rule already you can't keep a 28-inch fish. So for them to try to catch their fish in April and May, they're going to throw everything over 28 inches overboard. So you're just causing a discord mortality. It really doesn't make sense. This system works. And, you know, when you get along the coast, I'll have a lot to say about that. But I just can't see what you think you're gaining. Because anything you would try to save on bigger fish, and I think they're entitled to bigger fish like everybody else. You know, I think Virginia citizens deserve the same thing somebody from Massachusetts or Rhode Island or North Carolina or anywhere. We all deserve the same thing. And I don't know what you think you would be gaining. I'm afraid you would call more discard mortality. That would be a waste.
Okay.
Anybody else? See none, okay.
So second option is to establish a maximum gill net mesh size for all areas, coastal and the Chesapeake Bay. Right now, in the past, we proposed a 7-inch maximum size limit for the Bay Area and a 9-inch maximum size limit for the coast, but that wasn't implemented. So Pat Gear will be providing you with some mesh size selectivities and how vulnerable, catchable they are under different size requirements.
That's really not what you have printed in here. It says 7 inches for both.
That's an example. That's an example that we were going to discuss with you, but we haven't determined exactly, you know, we wanted to have that discussion with you first.
Robin said this to me and when I was in Florida, and this was completely different from what he said. So.
Can you live with a 7-inch now?
We can't have 7-inch on the ocean anyway. You know, you're working. We have to catch coastal migrants. So what we're working on is supposed to be over 28 inches. Everything has to be at least that. So it's two different fisheries. The quotas are based on two different things completely.
In 2009, the commission entertained a 7-inch maximum mesh size in the bay and a 9-inch in the coast. What came out of the meeting was 9 inches everywhere. But we lost trace of where that went or how long it was in effect. But that's what came out of the 2009 commission meeting because we looked it up. It was 9 inches for both areas, which, you know, clearly, you know, we think 7 and 9 is something to talk about. But two things. One, back to the previous situation, we're not trying to do anything but give you options, because I assume that no one wants a cut in quota. That's just a blunt cut the quota. So how do we help to the commercial fishery to ensure that...
I'm the one who made that motion.
I know you are. I know you are.
And the motion was 10 inches in the ocean and 9 inches in the back.
That's not the right...
Because we wanted to do something.
So I know you were. I read it.
Lost on me because I have a plenty of... And we did do that. And the reason we did it was 10 inches in the ocean because drum fishing, black drum. And at that particular time, I was black drum fishing, and we used a lot of 10-inch net black drum fishing. But you do catch some rock, not a lot. And we're working on a different set of fish. They've already spawned. So they're much, you know, thinner naturally. I just, you know, we already got a poundage quota. We got that established. So that's the hard quota. That's not something that we're hoping works. You know, a lot of this other stuff, we kind of hope it does. When we look at these options and stuff, if everything goes right, it may figure out to whatever percentage it happens to be. But in a case like the commercial, we actually had a 25% reduction. There was no doubt in anybody's mind. We had a 25% reduction because it was taken off our quota. We were given less quota, less tag, less everything. So I think, you know, in 7-inch nets, I'll give you a good example. You know, you probably don't. I know he knows. My cousin Danny Baden. I have a lot of 7-inch nets. I'm probably the only person on the Eastern Shore that has a lot. He was trying to buy some this spring. He has tried everywhere to find 7-inch weapon. It's just simply not available. He found some 7.5. And that was from Maryland to North Carolina. He tried everywhere and he just didn't have it.
We are struggling to figure out what to do with the commercial fishery because of the ITQ and because of the fact there's a hard quota, and because last time the ASMSC just said 25% on the coast, 20.5% in the bay. So if they come back with that this time, that's why we're trying early stages to present some ideas. The problem with the mesh size is we don't have a history of, we don't have the discards. We don't have the discards.
You can get that weapon.
Yeah.
You can get 8-inch weapon, but I don't know if you could get 7.
I guess what I'm saying is we don't have any history, any sampling history, any kind of history other than what VIMS has given us, which Pat will go over, of the selectivity of the nets. And that's, we don't mind bringing that forward, but I mean, I don't think it's going to be the same thing as, you know, the ASMSC wanting to do something with the commercial fishery like they did last time. That's
you know, I'm going to be honest with you. I was on the commission for 8 years. I was put there so they would have somebody, reading the commercial seats reserved, somebody that can share knowledge as commercial fishermen with the rest of the board. And, you know, I'll never lie to you because I've been lied enough to. And when I was on the commission, watering up there, I knew they were lying. Because, you know, I've done it all. I know what's going on. So there's no need in lying to you about any of this stuff. And the way gill nets work is this. If the water's cold, you better have very fine webbing, and you better have it the size that fits the fish. As the water warms up, when I used to shad fish, and I was the biggest shad fisherman, and you know that for a fact, I used 139. I had some 208. You would catch nothing in the 208 until the end of March. April, you could catch them in 90 millimeter. It wasn't making a difference because they had a lot of drive on and the water's warming up. When they're catching these fish in the bay, they have to have a net that's pretty well the size of the fish they're catching. Yes, you will tangle up a few bigger fish. But basically, if you have an 8-inch net, you're catching around 32 to 34-inch fish. You'll catch some bigger. You'll catch a few smaller. But the water's cold. So when Vince connects, does this study, you know, there's so many variables that can go into it that we don't know. And we have a lot of stuff. You know, every fish I catch, striped bass, Myra, samples. I don't think any of them she doesn't sample. And anybody that I would catch besides that, I used to catch spots and everything. She samples every one of them. We got a problem now. We got a lot of the quota that moved out of state is not getting samples. So we really don't know on that aspect. And Myra asked me to try to do something to help them out so you all can sample more fish. But, you know, the fact of the matter is that time of year the water is cold. You're going to catch fish that's basically the size for the net. You're not going to, you can sit, when I'm start fishing home, I will use 8, 9, and 7. I don't use 10 hardly any at all. I can put 8-inch and 7-inch alongside each other. If I catch 10 fish in the 8-inch, I might catch one or none in the 7-inch because they have no drive on them. The water's too cold. They lay up against the net. They stop. They drift away. So you don't catch them. And so, you know, them study might be fine on a scientific basis, but you have to have a large study. You can't have a certain time of year. You really need to have it concurrent with when you do fish, which would be studies every several weeks, maybe February,
So is this a non-starter? Is this a non-starter?
Is that minimum mesh size? And you know, it's going to be tough on everybody, and it's going to be very tough on the MRC.
So this goes away as an option.
I think you could probably get some people on the top.
Yeah, I got that. All right.
Okay.
Here comes Mr. Jones.
Yes, please. And then the other gentleman, Mr. Lightfoot.
Thank you.
Good evening, committee members. My name is J.C. Hudgens. I'm president of the Virginia Watermen Association, and I'm also a commercial waterman. We're not in favor of commercial option number two, mainly because it effectively puts a closure to the large striped bass fishery, as far as you were speaking about, the 8-9-inch nets. Probably option one, we might be in favor of closing that from January 16th to February 1st. I'd have to go back to my members and talk about that a little bit, but that could be an option. I will talk about three a little bit when you get to that. We are in favor of that. But really, too, I think it doesn't accomplish anything. And bear in mind, we tag every fish we catch. 1 year of the last 20, the commercial watermen have been under quota. 18 or 19 years, we have been under quota. Only 1 year we've been above quota. So the commercial waterman is not the problem here. I don't think we should stand any more reductions because we're doing what we're supposed to do in the fishery. We're abiding by all the regulations, and I just think that I think we can do some juggling and net sizes if that's something that you want to do, like an option three. But we're just not in the Mid Bay area where I'm from. We just started catching our fish March 10th, finished up about the 20th of March. So the 26th of March is a good date, I tell you. They're gone by then, and, we'll add a very small fraction of the big fish, whether it be males or females, then they're out of their area, And the bay needs to have a certain percentage, a very small percentage of that, I think is important. So, from our members, that's the way we feel, and I just want to let y'all know that's why we're here tonight, to protect the commercial quota because we are doing what y'all ask us to do.
And we appreciate it. Okay. The ASMFC may
I know
put some pressure on
unfortunately, us. Yeah, that's right.
And if you come up with any better ideas on how to shift pressure away from the larger spawners,
yep,
then we'd appreciate that.
Okay. Right. Yeah, if we could come up with some kind of numbers that show how many larger fish over 36 inches that are caught, prior to March 26th or something, Rob? Is that maybe a possibility, Maybe we could work on that and do something there, on that size or something. But our whole season revolves around a two-week period.
Okay.
And it's just territory is the way it works. Some guys catch it earlier up on the Potomac and Rappahannock, but on the Western Bay, that's what we go by.
I appreciate it very much. Mr. Lightfoot.
Again, I don't want to, I want to compliment what JC said and not contradict it, but I just want to give you some interesting statistics. For the previous chart, for the fish that are caught in January, they're primarily smaller mesh and they're in the James River. So Jill and Alex could run statistics if they'd see that the location's most likely James River. The area that JC is talking about is around Reedville, and there are a number of watermen there that don't have easy access to a river like the Rappahannock is farther away. So for years they have targeted the larger fish with 8 and 9 inch mesh, and they do catch primarily the larger fish. And of the 370 watermen that share our quota, Jill ran a statistic. I asked how many watermen average greater than 20 pounds. And my thought there was, that's the watermen that are specifically targeting bigger fish. And the number is 16. She didn't shake her head, but I remember the number. Now, I don't know how many pounds they catch, but I sell my fish to Ovier Seafood in Northern Neck, and they buy about one quarter of all of the Virginia quota. And as JC said, for 2 weeks in March, there were truckloads every day of 35 to 45 inch fish, primarily females, brought in every day, and those are mostly by the Reedville guys. And then the second piece I want to mention, and it's just an interesting statistic, that Maryland has a 7-inch maximum mesh size, and so does the Potomac. The Potomac has 585,000 pounds of quota. Their average size fish is 8.2 pounds in gillnets with a 7-inch mesh. And that season closes tomorrow, or today. It was the last day today. And it's interesting that with a 7-inch mesh, the Potomac catches 95 average in the last 5 years, percentage of their quota, more than Virginia, and with a 7-inch max mesh. Likewise, Maryland, with its quota, has a maximum of 7-inch mesh. Their average is 7.2 pounds. And they completely close their season from March, April, and May to protect the large females. So it's just an interesting statistic how the other two jurisdictions do very well with a 7-inch mesh.
Okay. Appreciate it.
What doesn't add up on that, though, Virginia has no mesh size, and we catch a 6.6 according to
Well, and if you look, the size fish that Virginia catches is getting smaller and smaller and smaller.
So then
it's going down 15% each 5 years.
So then we don't have a problem. We're doing better than the other two years.
But we're catching, we're only catching 80 mid-80s percent of our quota.
Right, so we're catching less of our quota. They're catching 95%. We're only catching 85%. We're catching smaller fish. All that just doesn't add up to me.
Well, what's happening is, I believe, that more and more watermen are targeting smaller fish because they can catch more of their quota earlier in the year when the price is high. By the time the big females hit the first and second week of March, the price is down to $2 a pound. Obiers is at $1.75. I caught all my quota with a 6-inch net in late February in 38 degree water, and I averaged $4 a pound. And so the reason I'm doing that is that by concentrating on the smaller fish earlier, I can get a higher price, almost double what you get when the market's flooded with the big fish.
Right, but it's got to be more than 16 watermen. If that's the time frame when that market gets flooded.
There's only 16 watermen that average more than 20 pounds of fish. Okay. I don't know where they're at.
Right.
What is it?
Okay.
I pack hardly any anymore, so something doesn't add up with all that debate.
Unless the statistic is wrong from Jill and Alex, it's 16.
Well, it's not going to change anything. It's probably a little different, but that's okay.
All right. Thank you very much.
So my point is, maybe we'd be okay with a 7-inch mesh.
All right, appreciate that input.
So, Rob, one of the things that recurring themes on the recreational side is to protect the large breeding fish. And something Mr. Lankford just said kind of struck a chord with me, and that if we move the closure for the large fish to the 28-inch maximum for the commercial fishery. And this is assuming that ASMFC says we have to do something to protect the large fish, which I think is the right thing independent of what ASMFC says. If we could move that, if we could look at what the harvest is on the commercial size, on the size or however you do it, and maybe move that a few weeks earlier, 2 or 3 weeks earlier to really protect, where maybe we're not protecting the breeding fish enough, especially if you consider climate change and the fact that things get, in theory, warmer in the spring, although it's still cold now. If the seasons move in, we may have to adjust these slots so that we can protect the breeding fish coming in. And that's just something that's not on your list anywhere, but something you may want to consider. And I'm sure there's somebody.
It is now. Like it. Okay, so when we started out in 1995, March 15th was when this restriction went in of the mesh size and the fish size. And it was moved. I don't know which year it was moved. It was moved to March 26. But we can look at the size composition by period and bring that back. That's fine.
And especially if ASMFC comes back and says we want to protect the fish, spawning stock fish.
Yeah.
And that certainly would protect them coming into the bay for the spawn, and hopefully would improve our recruitment.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll do that. I mean, I was surprised. I hadn't really looked, but there's a pretty good sample coming from the biological sampling program. So we can do that and show that to you. And then, you know, we know that the overages, the problems with the 28-inch fish are variable. Some years they're a very small amount. Other years they have been 20%. I mean, that goes back in time. I mean, so that might be something that the committee can look at next time.
All right.
Okay.
So next for commercial option three is to establish a maximum gillnet mesh size from March 26th through June 15th to accompany the existing 28-inch maximum size that exists during the period for all Chesapeake Bay areas and the Potomac tributaries. So that's just to make sure to have a maximum size limit that there's adherence to that 28-inch size limit being put in place.
That's only common sense, because you can't keep them, or no need having that over, make it up that you catch something you can't keep it. I couldn't imagine anybody that, in their right mind, would put large nets over when it comes out.
Rob said they have biological sampling that shows people are tagging fish over 28 inches during that flood flood, which I agree with you.
Yeah, you know, one time we were looking at the recreational striped bass fishery, and that closed slot limit, and they had the numbers up there, and there was a load of fish that people volunteered to be measured. So it could close slot size.
Right, so I think this is an easy one to put a max mesh size during this time frame to coincide with that.
Okay.
Everybody agrees.
All right.
Okay.
Commercial option four, to establish a 36-inch maximum size limit in Virginia tributaries of the Potomac River. The PRFC currently already implements a 36-inch max size limit for gill nets from February 15th to March 15th in the Potomac River, and BMRC can implement a similar max size, or actually the same maximum size limit to complement that measure that's already in place in the Potomac River. And so the table below uses our biological sampling data to look at the average amount of fish specific to the Potomac River that are 36 inches or greater. And so that number is just about 8.75%. And so if you were to apply that to the average landings from that area, it's just about 1,000 fish that we could expect, not exactly, but somewhere around about 1,000 fish that we could expect to be saved over 36 inches from this area.
All right. Any comments from the commercial sector on this one? Doug?
Doug Jenkins from Twin River Waterman Association. Optional 3 and optional 4 we would consider. But before we go with any of these optionals, we want our 20% quota back. Now, that may not... You know, I guess you're laughing again, are you, Lewis? Last time I come up here, you laughed when I was asked for tag assistance for the recreational fishing. But it's not funny to us. With the cuts in our quota in the past few years, we've lost 4 million pounds of fish. And the average of $3 a pound, that's $12 million. And we're not causing a problem. Massachusetts and the northern states and Maryland are causing the problem, and yet ASMC is asking us for to give up something. So if you got another option, put that on there. It's not fair. They're supposed to consider the economical and social value of all fishes, all user groups, and they're not doing that. If they can't see that, I say get out of it. If it means shutting it down for a few years, shut her down. And let Virginia regulate their own fish. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
At this point, I think Pat Gear can come up and he's going to talk a little bit about mesh size selection, because a lot of these options, 2, 3, and 4, all talk about a maximum size limit to help you understand what it would be catching. Thank you.
Hello, gentlemen. How are you tonight? I get to bring us home, I guess. That looks okay. Okay. There we go. All right.
Nope, you missed.
Doing that same thing, Pat.
Huh? I didn't do this last time.
You need
time,
to
so
get the default on this fixed.
Thank you.
That's to help us all.
There we go. Thank you very much. I'm going to talk about some gillnet mesh selectivity that FIMS has done. Ernie, you made a very good point about, you know, their data is what it is. It's over a course of a number of years. It's not going out with commercial fishermen. It's with their research gillnets that they've done. I'm just going to show some of the meshes that they've used and the catches that they had with it. I expect to hear from the industry saying that, you know, that's hogwash, or we agree with that. And, you know, just it's just an open discussion, you know, just to see, look at those options and throw out a couple of mesh sizes that we saw that, yeah, these may work, they may not work, and go along with those lines. To let you know what a selectivity curve is, it's gear net selectivity is defined as the probability of catching a fish at a given size when it's encountering a given mesh. Along the x-axis, the bottom axis, you have length. This is in millimeters. And along the y-axis is the probability. It's percent going from 0 to 1. The higher the height measures the efficiency of that mesh with a specific size. So at 200 millimeters, for instance, the height is very low, so it's only about 13 to 14% effective. So it's only maintaining, it's only retaining 13% of the catch of those size fish. The optimum size of the mode here is basically around 240 millimeters. So that's the optimum size for this individual mesh type. And the range goes across here. It's a range of values that feel, you know, that's a fair representative of what's being caught in that size mesh. We have these things called L25s or L50s, which just represent at what length are 25 or 50% of that catch at that size retained. So it's just an overview that this isn't something I did. I kind of found this on the internet and put it up here. It explains it quite simply. This is the VIMS research. It's been done from 1990 through 2018. They looked at 10 different mesh sizes, 3, 3 3/4, 4.5, 5 1/4, 6, 6.5, 7, 8, 9, and 10. The work was done in the James, the York, and the Rappahannock. About 4,700 fish. This shows the mesh sizes and the total that we're at, that they had at those sizes that type of mesh. This is coming from Chris Bonzak at VIMS. Off to the right, it shows each mesh size and the approximately percent for each one of these bins of length. So you can, as you would expect, as the mesh gets larger, the fish are getting larger, and that's what you see. And these lines on here are just reference lines I put on here for 18 and 36 inches. Going on to option two, which is establishing a maximum gillnet size in Chesapeake Bay, we've heard several people talk about a seven inch mesh. It doesn't catch any fish smaller than 18. It catches approximately 65% of the fish at 28 inches, about 100% of the fish at 32 inches, which is the optimum for this mesh size, according to their work. About 60% of the 36-inch fish are being caught with this mesh, and finally about 40 inches, about 21% are being retained with this mesh. We also looked at other mesh sizes. I didn't put the same shading on this one, but the mesh sizes for a size 9, someone mentioned they don't fish larger than 10, but this is a 9. The optimum size for that is just a little bit over 40 inches, so it's getting about, you know, 100% of the fish at 40 inches. It's not getting a lot of the smaller fish. So it's just giving you an idea. It's you follow the size of the fish here, and you look up until it intersects, and you come across, and it says it's catching 100%. Let's take 36, for instance. You run right up here, it intersects there, and it's about 66%. So that's how you read these gear selectivities. It's a series of them, but putting them on individual graphs make it a little bit more simpler. I don't think I have any other ones for this option. If anybody feels they want to comment on this, I think we've already had some comment. Anyone wants to add anything to it at this point?
Yeah, I'll give you a funny comment. You know, when they established this striped bass fishery, it was based on 75 to 79 in the ocean. I'm probably the only person that was fishing back then that's still fishing now. I've fished for a very long time. Back in the 70s and 60s, we were fishing on MSY, basically. There was no big fish.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's how you maximize your yield. You have no trophy fish, but you're really maximizing your yield. And we weren't on smaller fish. And when the fish disappeared, naturally, and they came back several times on the period, but in the 80s, we had a substantial year class, and they wanted to do all they could to save it. And they closed the fishery. We were the first ones closed in the ocean because they had a fishery that was like 30 days before they closed it. But it basically was for the rivers on the western shore. There was nothing in the ocean, very little on the eastern shore. It was basically James River and stuff that 30-day season was. Fish came back. When it first came back, I used 6.5 and 7s in the ocean. 6.5 would catch 3 times as many as the 7s would, because it was that size fish. What happened over a period of time, straight bass would be very old. Some of those fish that we saved from this 80s are still alive today. Probably not a lot, but straight bass would be very old. So over a period of time, you're hoping that all the year class fill out. So you're going to have fish from, when you don't see little fish, you really want to be worried. The big ones aren't as big as discerned, but the little ones can grow to big. The big ones can't. So when it maximizes the year classes, if everything's working right, and it has been, average weight goes up. Because you have more fish living to be older and older and older. Recreational fishing too, you know, we set quite a few records. A lot more citations and stuff, bigger fish. A 7-inch net catches around a 29-inch fish is about the minimum net of catch. You, when you get to the 28 inches, you can do that. If the water is warm, it will tangle up a certain amount of fish. It won't tangle up 6 because I'm a 36-inch fish. So that's a pipe dream by somebody. It will tangle up some. I don't know how they come to these conclusions. You know, if you had a net made with 10 inch here and 7 inch there, I could understand what got through and got into that net. So I don't really know how they come in. And I do know a lot of bass fishery management, but this is kind of new to me because, you know, yes, you will probably catch 100% of the 32 inch fish, I think, or very close to it. Once you get past that, the numbers drop drastically. There's no way you'll catch 21% of the 40 inch fish. If you're sitting in bird blades, you sit where fish are driving hard, like going up a river to spawn, that's a different case scenario. But most, you know, a gullet is a passive type of fishing. It sits there and you're hoping that the fish swim in it and get stuck. Well, when the water's cold, it won't. It will go up against it, it won't dry, and it just backs away. Now, when the water's warm, they got the first gill plate. Not to their gills, but they got one up on their face. They'll catch in that, and you will catch some 36-inch fish with it.
So you think it's steeper? You think it goes up and shoots right back down? I mean, like you said, 32 is probably
32. I'm not thinking, you know.
But you think it, you think that this graph it doesn't slope down? That it goes.
It's going to be different on the bank.
Yeah.
What I'm dealing with, because you're going to have fish with row in them, so they're not going to be as lively. They're going to gill and they're going to be bigger due to the fact that they have row. So they'll probably 28 inches on the bank. Probably 30 on the ocean, so like this. Well, I'm dealing with fish with no row in them. So I don't, you know, I'm going to dispute some of that. I don't dispute the first, the 28 and the 32. I believe I've caught a lot of fish in 6.5 and 7 inch nets, and I don't believe 36 inch. I have 3%. I would be a lot more realistic than 60. You just don't catch them. So I would disagree with that, and like I was saying earlier when we were discussing it, you've got to have it over a period of time, not a period of years, but a period of time during the year, for a number of years.
Let's say
before you can have reliability. And this is actually in one place.
Well, it's in three systems, but it's in three systems, but it's across 25 years, 28 years.
Variability.
No.
To base things on one thing.
No. I mean, at the time, this is, you know, we didn't have a lot of information. We asked Chris to put something together for us, and he was kind enough to do this. And you know, he pointed out some of the shortfalls on it.
The most popular saw the Fed Virginia is 8 inches. I would say, for a lot of everybody I know, use 8 inch
fence. Okay. Well, I've got that one. I can show that one. You know, go on. Any other comments?
So we have a saying about electron beams for our work. They seldom take the shape of curves named after dead mathematicians. I would really love to see the raw data plotted as a histogram rather than a Gaussian distribution with long tails on it. Because I mean, especially based on what Ernie said, you know, you're not really going to be catching these bigger fish.
Yeah.
So I would imagine at one end it's going to tail off faster than at the other. It's not going to be an even, nice, round Gaussian distribution. And with real data, you could look at it and maybe make some better judgments.
Yes, sir.
I've just got a short question. Charles Dright again. From what I've seen, a 7-inch is going to catch in the bay. It's going to be a 10 to 12-pound fish, and that's it. You might snag one 36 or 34, but you're not going to the bank with them. It's going to be a 10 to 12, and they're all uniform, and that's what you're setting this for.
Thank you.
Which means our tails in the industry are going to find is how long they
are.
Ernie, could you get by with a smaller fish on the coast? Are there enough of them coming up the bay? I mean, up the coast?
You can only catch what's there.
Right.
The fish I work on have already spawned. They left the Chesapeake Bay. And used to be, it was just Danny and myself. Now, the whole ocean floor is called the Chincoteague. Basically, a lot of it is. And most of it's caught by out-of-state boats that bought quotas.
Well, if you...
I don't know why we would want to change things. Because if you would have an 8-inch one up there right
I've
now...
I've got one. Wait a minute.
It will shift things about 2 inches.
Well,
how's that?
If we're going to try to protect the spawners, then you could get by with the smaller fish.
We were having the 36-inch maximum for a while. Spot will tell you, too, that... The 8-inch problem was you were right there. Some of them were 35,
mm-hmm.
Some of them were 36. So you had to measure every fish because you can't send them to New York.
This is the 8-inch.
Oh, you do have an 8-inch.
Yeah, I have everyone that mentions though. And you just mentioned 36, and that is the optimum.
So that's showing a 4-inch shift in 2 inches.
Yeah.
And like I said, 28 inches is the smallest we are allowed to have in the ocean.
If we change that, could you survive? Are there enough 28-inch, smaller than 28-inch fish out there?
You cannot have a lot smaller than 28.
Well, if the law was changed to protect the spawners.
No, well, the way things are set up, we spawn the fish, we get to catch them up to 28 inches, and then they're coastal migrants. And the coastal migrants got to be over 28. And basically, they belong to New England, is the way they feel.
Yeah, if you look at this, it's only about 18% of the fish, it's only catching about 18% of the 28-inch fish. It's catching the larger fish primarily.
And I'll be more than glad if you would bring all my remembers, all my fish you have for a year. I'd be more than glad to let you all put it up there on a thing. Gradually, the fish have got heavier, but it's been a gradual thing, a half a pound a year, and that's because the year class has been filled out.
All I'm worried about is could we take pressure off the spawners that they're moving up? They're going to be here next year. If we could get this law changed, you could get by with the smaller fish. Are there enough smaller fish out there for you to make a living?
There's no smaller fish out there to catch.
Okay.
We're catching fish that leave the bay. The males are the first thing they go in, and a lot of them stay there all the time.
That answers
that. And then the females come in, and then when the males still stay a lot of times. And you know, small fish, they get up in the water and they catch them rod and reel fish a lot of times during the summer.
You answered my question.
The ones leave, they're the ones we've always worked on in the spring.
All right. Thank you.
They're just no getting around it.
All
right. Mr. Chairman, I think the committee decided they didn't want to consider option 3. Is that the general consensus? I mean, I could go over this if you want.
They don't want to consider option 3?
No.
Yes. You can live with three.
Yes.
Oh, okay. You could live with three. Okay, so that's okay. All right, you live with three and four. So I had my mistake. We spent too much time. Looking at this for the March 26th through June 15th, with the existing 28-inch maximum in the Chesapeake Bay, looking at different mesh sizes, you know, 4.5 is not going to work. It's catching too many small fish. It's actually catching 33% of the catch are under the legal size limit. So I'm just showing that as an indication that's too small. 5.25 is probably, you know, a little bit more reasonable. It's catching about 50% of the 28-inch fish. So that would be an option. And I think I had a 6-inch in here as well, which is basically right at that 28-inch. That's the optimum mesh size for a 28-inch fish.
Except for if they can't keep anything above 28 inches.
Right, you still catch that. The problem with this one is it's if you look at that table to the right, they're catching a lot of large fish with a 6-inch mesh.
And again, it'd be interesting to see the real statistics on this.
Mm-hmm. All of us say no. Do you have any idea what size line you're using?
Say again?
Do you have any idea what
I can ask Chris. I mean, Chris provided this information. I'll ask Chris from Vince.
These guys don't want to pick fish out of the net they got to throw away.
Yeah.
No. That's the thing to purpose.
Yeah, that makes a difference, too.
I've tried every hook and line.
None of the industry has any confidence in these numbers.
That's important to know, too.
All the time.
Yeah.
So let's just appreciate the hard work and all that, but if none of the industry can buy into these numbers, let's not worry about gill mesh size right now. Well, let's start thinking of some other options.
Let's not base it on this.
Yeah. You made a really good point. If we had if from all our biological samples, if we had the mesh size, we would have a really good data set.
What you're running into, too, where we're at on the ocean, the small thing I'm allowed to use is 0.81 millimeter
mm-hmm.
because of the harbor porter's plan.
Yeah.
So if they're using, for example, 0.52, they're going to catch a lot of fish that I never even think about catching because the webbing is just so much, you know, clumsier. So, you know, until we know all the variables, that's a work in progress.
Okay.
We really need to know different things. We need to know when it was done, what time of year. We need to know, you know, the drawing size and different things.
Also, what other fish are being caught in the bay from March 25th to June, March 26th to June 15th, what that will affect. Is there any drum fishing in the mouth of the bay during that time frame where you would need a larger mesh?
Mm-hmm.
I know that I've had boats in Davis's Wharf catching spiny dogfish in May.
Yeah.
So, they're using 5 and 6 inch nets for those. It's rare that they do catch them in the bay, so we got to be careful also with mesh size that we don't affect.
All you have to do is stay while in possession of strike pass.
Okay.
You just ask something that to
them. All right. Are we at your time limit?
We are nearing the end.
I'm getting the hook.
We are nearing the end.
That's okay. No. I'm getting the hook.
See,
okay.
I can hook the big guy like that.
I'll just call the ring when it's part of it.
When anything happens, I stand behind Pat. So. A couple things. One is, we can meet April 22nd if you think that's worthwhile. It looks like what our charge is to take the suggestions we have had, mostly on the recreational end, and come back with that. And then for the commercial fishery, it's tough because you've got that ITQ, you have that hard quota, and if mesh sizes don't work, the way we were hoping mesh sizes would work would be that it's not the standard savings because you can still catch all your fish with your quota if you can, even though it's been under for a few years. But we can show that by catching less large fish, then that increases the spawning potential, reduces fishing mortality rate on those fish as well. And that's eventually what ASMSC does. Now, I say we can. We have to learn how to do that. I mean, we don't have anyone here who does that on a regular basis, but we certainly will try. That's where the mesh size came in. So if you don't want any of the mesh size, then we're back to, you know, coming up with something else. It's not much to do. If you don't want a season that's truncated other than January, 15 days in January, you as everyone here,
and you don't want the mesh sizes, then it becomes difficult. It does become difficult. And it's difficult for me. I'm one vote. There are 15 votes at the ASMSC. So Ernie understands that. He's been there.
I think mesh sizes would work. I just think we need to delve into it more.
Yes. Okay, that's
the
good.
Not the data that was shown tonight. Not the data that was shown tonight.
Okay.
It does sound like here and out here that we could go back to a February 1st start date versus the January 15th.
Right.
It did sound like people were in favor of that, so I think that's an option also.
You know, the fishery opened June 1st many years ago. It took.
I'm not that old.
Yeah. Oh.
I think opening in June 1st is kind
of when you did away with shad fish for some things. What was the 5 year?
Yeah.
Can be time to wear your net sack.
Yeah.
You know, I got brand new nets now. Everybody does. Mine don't last as long as a lot of people because the horseshoe crabs in Tom's Cove are.
Well, we'll do a little more on that. I know Mr. Lightfoot had corresponded with me, and the combination of that 36 inches, I didn't get a real good feedback on the 36 inch for the Potomac River tributaries, but that was in combination with the 7 inch mesh that the Potomac River Fisheries Commission has, so we can look at that. But we're happy to meet with you April 22nd.
Okay.
If you want to do that. I mean, but it's up to you whether you want to do that. I think we might as well keep working on this. I mean, that's what we're trying
to
do. Is that all right?
That's what it takes to get it done, yes.
April 22nd, then. Okay, well, thanks everyone who came tonight.
Well, I've got a question for you. What is the market size of striped bass? What's the market look for, mostly?
New York has changed, right? That's the big deal there.
Yeah, New York is, it used to be 24 to 36. They changed there, 28 to 38 now.
That's the big change there.
We lost four here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Real quick.
All right.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I asked Stanley and Stuart Obier, who are one of the larger buyers, and their market's restaurant's favorite size fish is the 8 to 12 pound fish. And the reason is this has the highest yield. It has 38% yield. The larger the fish gets, the more of that dark line that's in there, and the lower the yield. So the larger the size fish, the less yield that the companies cut that cut them and freeze them, the lower percentages that they get.
Thank you.
I have a comment that in the early 2000s, I packed 50% of the quota in Virginia, and all my restaurants, the bigger the better. And still to this day, they like them bigger. So it just depends upon the buyer and the area.
Yeah.
Make a motion to adjourn.
Second. We adjourn.